Cisco is pleased to present part 5 of a panel discussion series, The Future of Public Sector Workforce and Workspace Sustainability Series, on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. Today's topic is smart buildings. Here's your host, Tom Timmon.
And welcome to the show. Our guests today are Larry Melton, the Assistant Commissioner for Facilities Management at the Public Building Service at GSA, Phil Klokas, the CIO for the Public Building Service at GSA, and Gerald Charles Jr., the Director of Strategy and Planning for Cisco Public Sector. Gentlemen, it's great to have you. And our topic today is, of course, smart buildings and all of the issues surrounding the environments in which federal employees work. So let's start with kind of the sky view of this. Give us your thoughts on what it means today in architecture and building design to be sustainable, and what goes into a building to make it better support how people work today. Larry Melton, why don't you take the first stab at that question?
All right. One of the things we've known is that we're spending a lot of money in our buildings today. The best thing we wanted to do is figure out how best to utilize that strategy and make it more efficient for our end users, whether it's the property manager or the tenants in the building. We knew that we could no longer just have an IT strategy in our buildings without some sort of strategy going forward. So in that, we really focused our energy around our policy.
So it sounds like it's a multidisciplinary thing that's required: budget, IT, the architecture, so forth.
That's right. In fact, one of the things we focused on is our policy and our strategy on implementation and operationalizing it. That's exactly right.
Okay, Phil Klokas, you're the CIO. There's a big technology piece in all of this too, isn't there?
Yeah, there certainly is, Tom. And I would like to add one thing here. This is really a step in moving forward the agency's and the administration's sustainability goals. That's what smart buildings, intelligent buildings is all about. In addition to that, I'd also like to add, it's about operating our buildings in a more effective and a more efficient manner. And really, as Larry said, with our policy, it really focused on three major areas. It talked a little bit about our connectivity with our buildings. We have to connect our buildings to make them intelligent, make them smart. The data needs to be converged, and the data also needs to be normalized, because that's what it's all about. It's about the data. The data translates into information, and the information then translates into various actions that we can take to make our buildings operate in a more effective and efficient manner.
And Gerald Charles Jr., of course, Cisco makes a lot of the wiring and the plumbing for all this, so the electrical or electronic plumbing. What are the trends you're seeing in as you look across the whole federal space?
As both Phil and Larry talked about, this is as much about technology in the buildings as it is about just how do we work here in the 21st century. So as we work together in teams, much more as we work individually, as we worry about sustainability, as Phil had mentioned, as we worry about how do we just connect people, places, and things as we go about our business. We're also a very mobile, you know, society, so we're rarely in our individual office at one time. We're throughout the entire building, as well as at our customers, our suppliers, and so forth. And this multi-generational workforce that we have, which has, you know, very different technical skills, expectations, all of that is really about work. And our smart buildings are now really reflecting the change in our workplace or our workspaces. And so we've really been looking at that at Cisco as we provide a variety of solutions, not just in talking, I mean, not just in exchanging the information, you know, with IT, but how is that information exchanged? Where are people? How mobile are they? How do we really help them collaborate? How do they use video as we bring in all the human senses as we make our decisions?
So, Larry, yeah, that's a good question for you. What is it that the occupiers, mm-hmm. your clients, as it were, for the building service, what are they telling you about how they want their workers to work?
Well, the first step is really enabling the property manager to have real-time information and having that holistic view of the building in real time. With that, the property manager can then have information for the end user and that tenant to have data to allow the organization to actually react differently and actually serve their employees better.
So they want buildings that then support that in what way?
Well, in real-time information, you can have your end user and utilization numbers for your staff. Anything from energy that allows energy efficiency at the point of desktops. You know, nowadays you can actually control lighting and HVAC at the employee's desktop. right now in a smart building. In a traditional building, you don't have those types of systems and capabilities to do that, and you're reliant on an engineer to put an entire floor of HVAC lighting together, and that's not just most energy efficient way to run a building.
No, otherwise you're reduced to putting stickers on the light switches and telling people to turn off the lights when they leave.
That's right.
And so, Phil, as the CIO of Building Service, then you must look at some of the ways to get this done. What are the demands you're seeing? What are the requirements that are coming through your shop?
Yeah, I mean, the big requirement that we have here, Tom, is one of connectivity, and the buildings need to be wired and interconnected together. And we're also seeing a big push on our wireless technology. I mean, that is one of the big business drivers that we're having here. As the workspaces become more and more mobile, we need to provide. You can't have wires, people connected and with wires walking around, going from one workstation or to the other. So we're seeing a big driver in the wireless technology. We're also seeing a big driver with the way the people work and the type of workstations and workspaces that they're accustomed to. We're seeing collaboration tools becoming more and more prevalent in this new workspace. So there's a lot of activity going on, a lot of change in the workspace.
And let me go back to you, Larry Melton, the assistant commissioner for facilities management at the Public Building Service. Does all of this have an impact? First, let me back up even one more time. What I'd like to ask you is there a standard definition of smart buildings?
Well, with PBS, and I think Phil alluded to it, one of the things we've done is focused on three strategies: an open system, a non-proprietary, converged, and then an ability to normalize that data. In other words, put us in a position to react to that data in real time, at least from the property manager's perspective.
Data about what's going on.
About what's going on. That holistic view of the building data and building information, building automation systems, and what the building behaviors are. So we get that in the property manager's hands so they can actually react right away and inform customers. And quite frankly, customers can actually see through dashboards what's going on in the building, whether it's in a lobby or at their desktops as well. So there's so many ways that the end user can get data, and that's really where we'll focus a lot of on the people strategy.
And for the people that are working at these workstations being monitored that might like more air conditioning or less air conditioning, how does that data, which just looks like a dashboard to the building manager, how does that translate to a good work environment for the person sitting there that may not have any more control over the lights?
Well, you know, good working environment is a little subjective. So I think what it's going to come down to, especially in a mobile workplace, is a lot about socialization in the workplace. One of the things we're spending a lot of energy on right now is socialization in the workplace and trying to figure out how is it that people interact in the workplace. If you have a complete mobile work environment, people will come there, work in their cubicles, and not necessarily just want to sit there. They're going to look for that social interaction. So what we're looking at is some of the trends of what's going on in the real estate market to figure out how do people socialize in the workplace, are there trends, and then try to monitor and react to those behaviors.
Okay, and Phil, how does that translate down to technology?
Well, again, it is a challenge from a technology perspective, and it's all about leveraging what we currently have in place and in some cases improving it. And I'll give you an example of what I mean by this, Tom. I mean, we can utilize our smart cards, our HSPD-12 badge cards for physical access into the building. And perhaps just follow through with this example. I mean, you check in the morning, you swipe your card through, and the buildings and the devices within that building are connected. Perhaps it can turn your lights on in the office. In some cases, even power up your computer so that you're ready for work. You're at your login screen at the time you get to your desktop. So it's very exciting. It's very interesting. It's all about connectivity. It's all about tying the individual components within our building together in an integrated fashion.
And Gerald Charles Jr., how does that all tie together in terms of who's in charge? What do you see as the trend in, I mean, is it the custodial function? Is it the technology function? Is it facilities management? Who does all this?
Well, it's really showing the convergence of the governance model within the organizations, and that governance is now really three heads. It's real estate and facilities is one, it's information technology and IT is two, and then it's HR, you know, is three, because a number of the policies, you know, each person, how much square footage they get, what your personnel policies with respect to mobility and telework and things like that. Those three organizations that traditionally have been a little bit more siloed are now really coming together, and they're having to manage work you know, as a single entity. There's something else I also wanted to piggyback on what both Phil and Larry were saying, and that was really two themes. The first being on personalization and flexibility. Larry was talking quite a bit about now you can have a little bit more control in your immediate work environment. So if you think about what's happening in the rest of the world, where we have all these personalized emails and messages sent to us based upon what we do and what we know, the same thing is happening in your work environment because nobody wants the temperature to be for the building manager's, you know, preferred level versus the 1,000 other people that are in the room. So that whole concept of socialization, personalization and flexibility, that's one critical theme which you're seeing more and more in smart buildings. The other, as Phil was talking about, is access and access of information, both what we as people need, but also what the devices need. And, you know, Phil talked about the need for wireless and wired. We have so many different devices, so many different sensors. All those things also need information and access.
Yeah, that gets to an important point, too. Sometimes the way a building is laid out and constructed can affect the wireless patterns. And it's no longer a matter, is it, Larry, of just making sure that when a building is built, there's a fixed layout and everybody has the blueprints and the right wires go to each little station. A lot more flexibility, it sounds like, is needed in the way you lay out a building and then actually build it.
Absolutely. I mean, what it's going to come down to is figuring out, number one, how to maximize utilization of the building. You know, you can have a building that has the capability of 6,000 people in the building, but the reality is the utilization numbers are really around maybe, let's just say, 2,000 or 3,000 at any one point, whether people are on travel or doing other business outside of the facility. So it's really about looking at a building and trying to figure out how can we maximize that to the nth degree and know that we still have a reduction in overall energy intensity. You know, what I think the future is going to come down to is it's less going to be about energy consumption of the building and more about energy intensity on a per-person basis. And those are the things from a facilities management standpoint we're going to learn and react to much quicker based on true utilization numbers in the building.
So I'm getting a picture of a building as maybe like a series of a grid of squares, and each little square, which might represent where something is happening, a conference room or a person working, can almost be tailored lighting-wise, heating-wise, technology-wise, information-wise, down to that fine grain instead of, say, by floor or by wing or something. Is that a good way to look at it?
That's exactly right. And right now, in most of the real estate industry, most buildings are spending about 30% of more energy than they really need in facilities today, which becomes very costly.
And, of course, we have a presidential order to actually a series of them from several administrations now to cut that consumption bill, too, right?
That's right.
All right, and so, Phil, what does that all mean in terms of how you think about the technology infrastructure? It sounds like, you know, the wire from the phone and the Cat 5 all over the place is maybe giving way to a new model.
Yeah, we're starting again to see the convergence of the data, of the voice, of the information, of the video. You're now seeing more and more use of the video. I mean, we have, through our Cisco provider here, we've implemented a VoIP solution where we have actually video to the desktop for each one of our individual employees. So that goes back to the collaboration, just another way of looking at the information and converging the information, not only in what's in the building, but the technology itself. And so I'd also want to mention one other thing to piggyback off what Larry said. The fact that we're now working together, the IT people, the facilities people, as Gerald said, the HR people, we're all working together. I'm involved with a lot of Larry's upfront procurement in the design of the buildings, in the retrofits of the building, because technology plays such an important role in the future. So we're starting to see a much more integrated team working together to accomplish both of our goals.
Okay, Gerald Charles, what are you seeing with respect to that whole idea of the fine-grain tuning of a facility to support the larger mission and also the needs for energy consumption and ubiquity in data?
So we're seeing what Phil had mentioned, convergence has now emerged as a strategy, as a fundamental business strategy for these agencies. As they look at how these different either silos, we talked about IT, HR, or real estate, we talked about various pieces of information. We talked about how people work and how mobile they are or they are not. All that is converging. And now convergence has emerged as a fundamental business strategy, which then is also operationalized as an IT strategy, as Phil talked about. And by doing that, you can have the control that you want overall, but you can then fine-tune the control, as Larry talked about, you know, by the individual. And then that's what allows you to get the cost efficiencies in addition to service efficiencies that everyone is looking for.
And before we break, Larry, I wanted to ask you, now that GSA headquarters has moved out of its headquarters, I guess it's about a year now, you're retrofitting an ancient and historic and well-known structure in central D.C. Will some of these new concepts be baked into what results from the rebuild?
Absolutely, and we're proud of the fact that we're setting a goal of maximizing the 1800 F Street address by trying to extreme challenge and move 6,000 employees into that building. And we actually think we're going to be able to do it, and we'll truly maximize every square foot of that building.
How many were in there before you moved out?
About 2,500.
And 6,000 are going to go in.
That's our goal.
And they're going to like it.
We're going to love it.
That should be very interesting. You're listening to Cisco's panel discussion on the future of public sector workforce and workspace sustainability here on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. We'll return in just a moment.
Wake up and drive in with Tom Tamman and Amy Morris on the Federal Drive. It's your early line on the day ahead from your trusted advisors. Tom and Amy give you a full view of the issues. Find out what your colleagues in other agencies are up to and what policy and congressional developments mean to you. The Federal Drive with Tom Tamman and Amy Morris. Weekday mornings from 6 to 10 on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM.
Federal News Radio in a Web 2.0 world. Find Federal News Radio on Facebook and Twitter. Follow us on Twitter at twitter.com/FedNewsRadio or join the Federal News Radio group on Facebook. Chat with our team and make connections with others in the federal arena. Email us at fnrcomment@federalnewsradio.com. Visit our website, federalnewsradio.com. Federal News Radio, 1500 AM, your source for federal news now.
Welcome back to Cisco's panel discussion on the future of public sector workforce and workspace sustainability here on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. I'm Tom Tamman. Our guests today are Gerald Charles Jr., Director of Strategy and Planning for Cisco Public Sector, Phil Klokas, the CIO for the Public Building Service at GSA, and Larry Melton, the Assistant Commissioner for Facilities Management in the Public Building Service at GSA. And before we broke, we were talking about the nature of buildings. It sounds like you might be able to characterize the modern, sustainable, flexible building almost as a living organism. Gerald Charles Jr., can you comment?
Yes, I can. You know, that's really a very good analogy if you think about the discussion that we've had and what's going on in industry, because more and more buildings are containing all kinds of sensors, the heat, the light, the people, how much power you use, and so forth. And then all that information is really transmitted kind of back through the central nervous system, you know, or over, as Phil mentioned, your wireless or wired infrastructure to the brain or to some facilities manager, to some, you know, central management console where decisions are being made. And that's very similar to kind of how, you know, a living organism works or a body works. So as Larry had mentioned quite a bit, as these buildings are morphing and becoming more intelligent, they're really acting and behaving more and more like a living organism.
Okay, then we have actual living organisms, the meatware, if you will, or the people that populate the buildings. And so, Larry, what is going on? What's the state of the art in thinking about how the people fit into all this? Because do you adapt the building to the people or the people to the building? What's going on there?
Well, there's two approaches. Number one, I think for the end user and the tenants in the building, you're trying to propagate those new norms to try to get people to actually be good stewards of building operations. So while they may not be building operators, what you want to do is inform your customers who are walking in the building how to actually adjust to the building and adjust to their needs, but not only just their needs, but to the building's needs as well. So if you can educate the consumer when they walk in that, hey, you're spending this much energy in real time as they walk in, they're more apt to make an adjustment when they go sit in their cubicle. That's kind of part one, so educating the consumer and the end user. The second piece, and probably one of the more important pieces, is really the people who actually operate the buildings and finding the new skill sets of people who actually know how to operate buildings and in this technology-based environment. You know, our buildings today aren't really equipped and connected to servers and all this network stuff. So the people who are running buildings today aren't really familiar with how to do that. So finding that skill set of people is really a tough niche for the industry right now.
And Phil Klokas, so many federal workers are mobile nowadays. They may have a headquarters that they are assigned to, but so many people travel from office to office or even work from not an office. And so how can all of this thinking support mobility, which is such a big factor in computing and in the way people work now?
Right. Mobility is really one of one of the big future trends in this whole industry here. And one of the things we're doing from an IT perspective is you got to know where the people are going to sit when they get to their location. And for that matter, they need a reservation or a hoteling type system. This is one of the things that we're exploring a little more and piloting in a lot of different facilities that we have throughout GSA. So that's a very important feature. Think of it again, you wake up in the morning, you log in perhaps with your smartphone, you get on to into our book it system and you say, I want a place for 1800F, and lo and behold, you reserve that spot and you show up at work. Your environment is ready for you to go. So that reservation system is paramount to the success of this mobile workforce.
And what about cloud computing? It seems like if you're moving from place to place or building to building, you may not have the physical infrastructure that in the old computing days, you know, one person per one MAC address, and you were tied to that data center. Gerald Charles, what's the cloud angle?
Well, the great thing about what's happening with cloud and cloud services is it's doing two things. One, it's allowing organizations to provision these services on demand, no matter kind of where or when their employees or their customers are at. And the second is it does it in a way, you know, not just from a cost perspective, but it allows people to consume the services the way they want. So if you think about what Phil was just talking about in terms of reserving the resources that you need, you may do that when you walk in the door. In fact, the building may help you do that. You may know weeks in advance, and so you might do it through your scheduler or Microsoft Outlook or something like that. You may do it from home. Cloud and cloud-based services are allowing users to, you know, get the services that they want on demand, and it allows organizations to be able to deliver or provision those, you know, at scale, at need, anytime, any place, anywhere.
Yeah, I'd like to add to that, too. It's a lot of times, cloud solution isn't the right solution for everything. It has its place. And I like to look at it as off-premise computing because, and I'll give you an example of what we did at GSA. We're currently moving, and within the next 2 weeks, hopefully would have our cloud-based email solution deployed throughout our entire enterprise. And interestingly enough, there are approximately 4, 5, 6 servers at each one of our regional office buildings that currently are hosting or housing our email environment. Well, by moving to the cloud, we decommission those servers. We're increasing the energy utilization, or decreasing the energy utilization by getting rid of those servers. And we're making the availability of our offering much more robust in terms of continuity of services. So there's a lot to do and a lot to be said about the cloud and the off-premise computing. But again, it's important to note that the cloud-based solutions are not, it's not the silver bullet for everything.
And just to really further echo that point specifically at GSA, if what Larry was saying a little bit earlier, in 2,500 users in one building, it's now a much larger footprint, you know, in thousands more. And so to Phil's point, the ability for cloud to help provision and do that without having to worry about how much more server space they need, what is that going to mean, you know, inside the building. If you look at cloud and the right application at the right time, it can be very, very powerful.
And the other big variable here, of course, is the devices, because we all remember the first Osborne luggable PC, and you wouldn't want to carry that around now. Now we have smartphones and tablets, and we all have them. There's a bunch of them scattered on this table, if you could see this. And so how did the device strategy fit into the overall working strategy?
Yeah, and we're starting to see more and more people, especially the younger generation, and think, I have three girls, and they all work differently. They all have their iPhones and their iPads and their tablets, and the younger generation really wants that flexibility and that what I call device independence. And what we're seeing a lot now from our IT system perspective, it's all browser-based. It's all web-based. As long as you can hit a website or a web application, you pretty much can get the information and the system that you need access to, and that's what it's all about. So we're seeing a rather quick shift away from that day-to-day or that desktop where you're tied to your desk to more of a smaller device, smaller footprint on the front end as we move forward.
And Larry, are you seeing that in what customers for federal GSA's customers for across the federal agencies, is that what they're asking for? Is that what they're emphasizing?
Absolutely. I think when it comes down to it, everyone's realizing that in these type times of budgets, we all have to be more efficient on how we use our money, and real estate is, quite frankly, one of the largest ways we can save money. So when you look at your space, you got to be more efficient. So I think agencies right now, and this is where GSA is stepping in to help our customers, we're trying to find ways to get the agency to actually think how they can do their business differently. The way of the past isn't necessarily the most efficient way. And I think with the technology capabilities today that Phil just talked about, the sky's the limit. And that's why agencies have to figure out, okay, well, maybe can I do that in a web-based program? Do I even need to have that service in the building? Can it be done 100% remotely? So those are the things we're trying to help our customers think through strategically.
Right, and off-premise computing, what we're trying to do is save real estate, right? If I don't need that big server room or that server room on-premise or on a particular floor, I can convert that to usable space for tenants. So there's a lot of benefit, if you will, with this off-premise cloud-based computing technology that's upon us.
And that, frankly, is a topic that we at Cisco, really love. Customers for a long time have been talking about, they really don't want to have to worry about what kind of device it is or where somebody is or when it is. And so to Phil's earlier point about a proper convergence strategy, and then the network fabric really provides the capabilities, the services, the security that enable organizations to really do that. And that's where Cisco really has taken a leadership role. That's where we've invested in being able to provide those capabilities.
Now, Phil, you mentioned it's all browser-based and therefore device-independent. And so that implies that there has to be a way of getting to that website, as you said, and that means wireless. And there are many ways to skin that cat. There are 4G and 3G network services. There's also the Wi-Fi within a building. And so how do you manage what it is that people use for access so that they're not always on the most expensive way of access? Say it might be the 4G. Once they walk inside, why should they still use the 4G? So right. How do you manage that?
Right, and there are a couple ways. And one of the things that we're starting to see now with federal agencies, and again, I'll use GSA as I used to run the infrastructure, the wide area, local area network infrastructure for GSA, more and more of our switches and our routers and our back office have the capability of providing the wireless access points or the fabric to provide those wireless access points. So that coupled with a open floor space, we get much broader coverage. And you mentioned some of the 3G, 4G. A lot of folks are coming in with their own air cards, if you will, or company or agency-provided air cards. So you're starting to see more and more of that come about. And funny you should mention, this is really relevant because Larry and I are chairing a working team to put Wi-Fi hotspots in our federal buildings. That's one of the things we're looking at. Not so sure how economical that's going to be, but that's a huge project. As you know, PBS is one of the worldwide leaders or a large landlord in for the federal government, or the largest, if you will. And putting that Wi-Fi access in a lot of our federal buildings is something that we're going to look at because we do see the advantage of doing that.
Yeah, Larry, there's more than that, more to that than meets the eye. Sometimes you need electrical outlets in places you never would have dreamed of having to have them. Just as an example, some of the big propagation stations need their own power. And so what is the result of all this for facilities?
Again, I'll go back to my people peace connection. And one of the things that we're going to see for the operators of the building, when you see wireless going into the building, it convert your engineers and your operators to having handheld devices to actually operate the building in real time. Now, when they go out and try to perform maintenance on a facility, on an operation of the building, they can actually respond to it in real time versus the old traditional way of actually going up, visiting the customer, come back down, sit at a computer, and enter some sort of data. You can now do things in real time, and that's kind of where we're going. Even in these old buildings that the federal government has, we can actually, we're positioning ourselves to do that.
And what about, there's a lot of server virtualization going on, and that relates to cloud computing and saving real estate and footprint space in buildings. But there's also user virtualization or PC virtualization, in which the user's state now exists as a virtual machine, which can be everywhere. Is that coming into play here?
It is, and it also goes to some of the things that Larry was just touching upon in terms of what are these services that you get when you walk into a building, kind of no matter where you are or when you are, and then how does the infrastructure support that? How does the building infrastructure support it in terms of, you know, power to your earlier comment, the space, you know, kind of your workspace footprint, and then in the network, what are the things that the network services are providing, understanding who you are and what you're doing. So even going back to your comment earlier about kind of wireless and 4G, as you roam around the building, and you may still be doing something, you know, on your laptop or on your CS tablet, whatever it is, you don't want to lose connectivity as you just go from your office, you know, to your meeting. So your building and virtualization services as well have to be able to support that and provide that.
Yeah, virtualization, desktop virtualization is really another big trend we're seeing in the industry that I think is just going to help promote the mobile workforce here. And if I can give an analogy, IT is almost like a pendulum. It swings back and forth with the neatest and newest trend, if you will. And if you look back in the 70s and the 80s, we had the big iron, and we were hard connected with dumb terminals to this big iron, and the big iron ran all our systems and all our processing. As the PCs and it started to take hold in the marketplace, what you saw, in my opinion, is more that client-server technology to start to replace some of that back-office mainframe and functionality. So you had more processing, thick clients, because the PCs were powerful enough to do it. And you just had your mainframe storing the information. Now with cloud computing and more of server-based technology, and web-based technology, you're starting to see that pendulum swing back the other way to more of a thin client. Get back to your point on the desktop virtualization. The small footprint, browser-based, web-based access promotes mobility, promotes that access anywhere, anytime, with any device, and that's really what we're starting to see more and more of.
Yeah, I just wanted to add, one of the things that we're going to see in the future is essentially a sustainability support center, or in our regional operations, like a network operations center. So the property manager of the future will actually have some sort of data, or call it your own Star Trek Enterprise facility, where they can actually see everything that the building's performing on. And that's kind of where the cloud-based data is going to be so critical, because you can't have data centers and network server locations all over the building to house all this new data that you're piling in the building. So one of the things we're trying to focus on is setting up network operations center to really position our people to be able to react quicker.
So not only does the data and the applications exist in the cloud, but we ourselves, the people, their corporeal identity as computing elements is also in the cloud, which means you're everywhere.
It is. And if you even think about what happens as we have projects that start and stop, and teams and the workforce surges as you have an individual task, or maybe if you're a FEMA and you have to unfortunately respond to a natural disaster, and a big team assembles, has to go someplace or places, do what they need to do, and then they in essence disassemble. So that's happening in buildings, you know, currently that's a big issue, you know, for a lot of property managers in terms of how they deal with that, for IT managers in terms of how they deal with the infrastructure to support that. So that cloud model is really applicable to kind of people, place, thing, process as well.
You're listening to Cisco's panel discussion on the future of public sector workforce and workspace sustainability here on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. I'm Tom Temin. We'll be right back.
Federal News Radio in a Web 2.0 world. Find Federal News Radio on Facebook and Twitter. Follow us on Twitter at twitter.com/FedNewsRadio or join the Federal News Radio group on Facebook. Chat with our team and make connections with others in the federal arena. Email us at fnrcomment@federalnewsradio.com. Visit our website, federalnewsradio.com. Federal News Radio, 1500 AM, your source for federal news now.
Wake up and drive in with Tom Tamman and Amy Morris on the Federal Drive. It's your early line on the day ahead from your trusted advisors. Tom and Amy give you a full view of the issues. Find out what your colleagues in other agencies are up to and what policy and congressional developments mean to you. The Federal Drive with Tom Tamman and Amy Morris. Weekday mornings from 6 to 10 on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM.
Welcome back to Cisco's panel discussion on the future of public sector workforce and workplace sustainability on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. I'm Tom Tamman. Our guests today are Phil Klokas, the CIO for the Public Building Service at the General Services Administration, Gerald Charles, Jr., Director of Strategy and Planning for Cisco Public Sector, and Larry Melton, the Assistant Commissioner for Facilities Management at the Public Building Service at GSA. And gentlemen, one of the things we wanted to really cover, I think, is important. And tell us what the state of the art is in collaboration and greenness and energy sustainability. What do you put in buildings nowadays that supports all of those things?
Yeah, with us, one of the things we're really proud of is with the Recovery Act, it gave us a unique opportunity to green a lot of our facilities. And that is, in theory, it's actually getting us in a great position to get a lot of our buildings LEED certified. That said, the paramount starting point for us with smart buildings and tying in the CIO's perspective with our facilities management perspective is really it starts with advanced meters. We realized that advanced meters was really the hub for us to get our buildings to talk to each other, number one. Number two, get real-time information to change those people behaviors. We knew we couldn't do it without data. So the first step for us was advanced meters. Along the lines of doing a lot of other greening technologies, the hub and the starting point for us was advanced meters.
Okay.
Yeah, and I'll add the from a collaboration perspective, different people work in different locations, perhaps at different times during the day, and collaboration is becoming another key element with this mobile workforce. And think of it, you know, certain times during the day, I'm in a meeting or I'm working in a team room. Other times, I want to be heads down and I want to be concentrating for a half hour. So the workspace has to be able to accommodate that. In terms of other items in terms of collaboration that we need to focus on is document sharing. And being able to, it's a virtual world, let's face it. So virtually collaborating is becoming more and more of a trend that we're seeing with this type of technology and smarter buildings, more intelligent buildings, and then actually a different way for people to work in the workplace.
Two very rich points in where Larry was going. One is the more information that you know kind of about your environment and what's happening has a significant impact on your behavior. And more research is showing that. So the more that you know how much energy that you're using because you left your monitor on or two monitors, PCs and so forth, the more you think about and actually may trigger a change, which actually goes into saving money for the building as well as an individual contributing better to the environment. The second is the more information that you have, the more you can actually collaborate and meet your needs of collaboration. So whether it's a group and meeting all the needs of the group in terms of what resources they need in their meeting room or in their office, what the video requirements are, do they need kind of a WebEx because they're sharing documents, you know, as Phil was just talking about. Even what's going to happen later in the meeting, if you're going to bring in, say, food, it might be a lunchtime meeting and how you can do that. So more and more, it's adding to our ability to collaborate and then really focusing on what's the decision that we're trying to make and less on, do I need the AV person there? Do I need this resource there? Do I need that resource there?
Yeah, Larry brought up an interesting point in the sub-metering because we're seeing, instead of just monitoring energy consumption at the building level, you're starting to decompose that down to perhaps. We have a lot of buildings that have multi-tenants in it, and they all are asking us, I need to see my data. I need to know how much energy I'm actually using on floors 2, 4, 7, and this wing. So having those submeters in place certainly helps. And then breaking it down even further into the with the individual also helps changing those behaviors. So good point.
Yeah, so adding on to that, now let's take it to the nth degree. Now, if we can get that down to the cubicle level, we now have information we can actually position our customers to say, you know, this is not how much you're spending on the second, third, and fourth floors, but this is how much you're spending in these cubicles. So now you can say, well, gee, these people are working a lot longer. Why is that? Now, as an organization, this is where that organizational alignment piece comes in with the CIO, the facilities group, and the HR group all coming back together to say, wait a minute, we have a strategy here that there's obviously a different work ethic or different work groups working at different stages in the workplace. Why is that?
And think about that with what Phil mentioned earlier about your ID card. So when you walk into that cubicle and swipe your ID card and your cubicle automatically configures for you, your phone is already there with all your phone services. Maybe you were on a conference call as you were walking into the cubicle, you were running a few minutes late. That is automatically transferred to your desktop screen so you can still see the same document. There's just more and more things that we can do to allow us to really better collaborate and better focus on what we want to do versus all the infrastructure that surrounds it.
And I think where we are today, unfortunately, is I think people, are not just government, but in the industry, thought small when it came to those types of cards. Those cards, anywhere else, you put it in a wall and it turns on your hotel room. It's the same concept. Why did we think small and put it on a computer? You know, that same kind of capability could have turned on a room. Instead, we thought small and said, let's just put it on a laptop, right? So smart buildings is a lot about thinking big.
And we've covered a lot of ground: sustainability, collaboration, flexibility, thin clients, and also about squeezing more people into a given space. And so just briefly, I'd like to touch on what does that space look like that brings all this together in terms of lighting, in terms of the experience of the individual who may be mobile, but has to be in a building occasionally. The traditional cubicle sounds like it's going out the window also.
Well, yeah. And first, most offices are averaging about 250, sometimes 350 square feet per person, which is a pretty large place. In the future, what we're starting to see in the trends in the industry is that it's going to be more around 100 to 120 square foot cubicles, if they're cubicles at all. Now, if it is a cubicle, definitely low-rising cubicles, very open collaborative space, so you can get a lot of daylight in there. That's one of the things we're finding is that people react better to natural daylight. Lighting control sensors at the cubicle so that you can lower the lighting levels of, say, and get some of that benefit of the natural light in. But it's clearly a much open, inviting, a larger inviting area.
Well, how is that different from, say, the Civil War pension building floor from the 18th century or the 19th century with just rows and rows of desks with big windows and no privacy and no ability? How could you collaborate in a situation like that where everybody's open?
Well, this is actually truly a case of more versus less is more. So where Larry was going with that, as we recognize how we work, as we recognize that now up to 85% of the time we're working in teams versus individually. So that space is now more configured for us to be as a team. We want to be more social. We have to be more social because of the things that we have to do. So we're getting some space efficiencies, but we're actually getting productivity efficiencies, and we're now smarter in how we do that with daylight harvesting and other things like that.
And I also think the workforce is changing too. The younger workforce coming in, they're used to open and doing different things at different times. You know, that's a big thing. Again, I alluded to the fact that I have three daughters, and they're doing on their smartphone, they're watching TV, they have their headphone, their music going on, they're doing three or four different things all at once. I have no idea how they can concentrate like this, but that workforce is certainly changing the way we have to make sure that we configure our buildings in the future.
Now, for federal program managers, this has to all add up to something more important in a sense, or larger than all of this. And that is the ultimate delivery of the federal mission to the constituency. It could be the public or some segment of the public. It could be another federal agency, whatever. How does all of this ultimately support mission delivery?
I think this is where, you know, hopefully GSA is positioning ourselves to insert ourselves with our customers to really help them be more strategic and ask these tough questions. All the questions we've been talking about today are all questions federal agencies are going to have to start asking themselves. They are not easy decisions, but at the end of the day, when you look at your corporate real estate and the cost of operations associated with your organization, I think most organizations realize there's such an added benefit to maximizing technology, smaller footprint, and better utilization of the space. And when you do that, I think you're going to see a more engaged workforce working in a more collaborative environment.
From an IT perspective, our goal is to make it seamless. Whether you're working in this new smart building, intelligent, or at home, or on the road, or in a traditional office setting, in my mind, we, from an IT perspective, have to enable that that flexibility to accommodate that need.
And we're seeing three very crisp, clear buckets of performance improvement that are interesting not just to the taxpayers, but to all stakeholders. The first is cost. There's a number of areas where we're seeing cost savings, whether it's real estate footprint, whether it's, you know, lower IT cost. There's huge number of cost savings. The second is in green, or the environmental footprint, and our consumption of that, you know, has gone significantly down, which also, frankly, translates directly into cost savings. And then the third, as Larry mentioned, is really about our productivity of the workforce and productivity of the services that are delivered to citizens. So from the citizen's point of view, you know, the government is the stewards of our taxes, and so they want to see those savings and cost and so forth. They also want to see their services achieved better, quicker, faster. So in the more time that someone has actually spent on, you know, handling a case, you know, reducing it, the better it is for the citizen.
Yeah, that's interesting. Interesting predicament for GSA, the landlord, to be in. Most people say, "Well, aren't you in the space business? So don't you want as much real estate as possible? Isn't that how you win?" And the reality is, no. As stewards for the taxpayer, it's actually, if we can utilize our space better, more efficient, and encourage other agencies to do that, then we're actually working in the best interest of taxpayers. It's not about how many buildings can we get. You know, it's not about let's double the size of our inventory. That's not what this is about for PBS.
And by the way, we should mention too that the president has ordered agencies to shed the government of excess space. And as you go about doing that and fulfilling that order, is sustainability, the ability to support these new collaborative work environments, are those among the criteria that you'll have in deciding what space to keep and what space to shed?
Yes. GSA is actively participating in the presidential memo and the teams that are working on that. Obviously, a lot of everything we're talking about here today is going to be the crux of the discussion of, all right, well, how do we do it? It's not a matter of if we're going to do it. Everyone recognizes the need to do it. So the question is, all right, not if, but how do we do it? And this is all the strategy we've talked about today will get us there.
And before we close, I wanted to go over kind of the cultural aspect of this, because we're talking about shared facilities, sometimes shared equipment, shared spaces and chairs, and a lot of people grew up in the workforce or grew up at home maybe having their own of everything, because, you know, they call these personal technologies because there's one per person. How does sharing affect that aspect of it? I was going to ask you, Phil, what you're hearing or seeing.
It's a behavior change, and it's not going to be easy. I mean, anytime you try to change the norms, change the behaviors, change the culture of an organization, of an agency, or of anything, it's very difficult. And you just have to be creative. Another good example that I'd like to use is, you know, we were talking at break about the use of the phones and having sanitized wipes there to say, I'm not going to use Tom's phone, you know, no way I'm going to use that phone. But and the answer to that, maybe you do have some wipes there to sanitize the equipment, or maybe you use soft phone technology. And there are different types of technologies that we can use to help change those behaviors.
It's like the shoes in a bowling alley. They give them a good spritz in between
games, right there.
Yeah.
They do. And what's interesting is the cultural change that's happening, and it's not necessarily tied to a generation. It really is tied to the individual and how they feel. One of the things I, you know, love about Cisco, just even say in our area offices here, we have offices in Maryland, D.C., and Virginia. Yet whenever I walk in any one of them, when I get to whatever space I'm going to work at, I can, you know, basically punch in my phone, and up comes my phone, my speed dials, my set of services, information on traffic, weather, stock, you know, emergency response, all those different things, and I'm not worried about that. Now, in our case, sometimes we do have the sanitized wipe, so if I really feel I have to wipe it down, I can or I cannot, but the bigger thing for me and for my colleagues is, it's the simplicity that allows us to focus on our work and, you know, what we want to do there and not spending time on other things.
I guess, you know, you've arrived when you get your own personal handset that you can bring from phone to phone. Larry, comment?
No, I was just going to say, you know, the piece, and this is all the technology-driven behaviors, and one of the things that will obviously change is in hoteling environments, in the workspace, in the collaboration workspace, one of the things that will have to change is how people are used to behaving when they leave the workplace. You know, you can't just leave the place untidy. So behaviors for the people and the end users will change, in as much as the operators and the building operators and the custodial staff will have to be extra careful when they're going through these public areas. You're going to have to clean them a little more frequently. So all those things are things that we're realizing might be cost drivers or prohibitors from some of the behavior change, but those are all things that I know the industry is looking at, we're talking about. We're actually excited because I think there's a lot of efficiencies of trade that we can figure out.
All right, so taking it up to the ultimate level, just if you would, very briefly, I'd like to ask each of you, what will the federal worker say about his or her workspace, say, 10 years or now, from now? It used to be, say, long hall with the doors lining up on each side of the hall. That's gone. What will they say? My workspace is what?
Fully capable. I think it enables me as a user. I think people will feel empowered to make decisions on their space, what they need, and how to use that space. And I think ultimately there will be a socialization aspect that most employees don't necessarily get today, or they'll have to go to the local coffee shop, or they'll have to go to a cafeteria to get today. They won't need that.
And Phil?
I think they'll be connected. I think they'll say they're connected. I think they'll say they're mobile. And I think most importantly, the critical success factor here is flexible.
And Gerald?
It's going to be about what they don't say. They're not going to talk about what was the traditional classic drab government space. Their government work environment is going to be much closer to what their home work environment is.
All right. Well, thanks, everyone, for participating. And we want to thank you today for listening to the Cisco's panel discussion on the future of public sector workforce and workspace sustainability here on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. Our guests have been Larry Melton, Assistant Commissioner for Facilities Management at the Public Building Service at GSA, Phil Klokas, CIO for the Public Building Service at GSA, and Gerald Charles Jr., Director of Strategy and Planning for Cisco Public Sector. I'm Tom Temin.
Thank you for listening to Cisco's panel discussion on the future of public sector workforce and workspace sustainability on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. To hear this show in its entirety and more information, go to federalnewsradio.com. Keyword work.